It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Mary Thomas Hart. Mary Thomas is chief counsel with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. And it's so exciting to see you because this is the first time I've actually seen you since 9-0 Supreme Court decision, WOTUS. That's got to be exciting.
Yeah, you missed a big dance party. I've been saying for the last few weeks that we've been dancing on the grave of WOTUS, which is really exciting. But yeah, good to see you, Tony.
So that WOTUS decision was 9-0, and obviously we really dug into that before it happened and then after it happened. But it still leaves, I think, a big question as to what do we do now, because this was on the Obama-era ruling, or the rule. Then you had the Trump rule, which has been rescinded, and another rule that's now in effect. So where does this really put us?
No shortage of questions, no shortage of issues surrounding this kind of larger question, right, of what is Waters of the United States? As you said, that Supreme Court decision gave us some really positive outcomes, a couple specific pieces that I'll get into. So first, the Supreme Court decided unanimously in favor of the Sackett family. That is a couple that bought a piece of lakeside property to build their dream home, went through over 10 years of litigation, and went to the Supreme Court twice over the jurisdiction of that really small piece of property in perspective. So really exciting that family got a win in particular. But then we kind of get into why they won, and a unanimous decision finding that the significant nexus test, which is the underpinning of both the Obama and Biden WOTUS definitions, as illegal under both the Clean Water Act and the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. A huge decision from the Supreme Court, really a landmark decision. And then a majority of the court kind of crafted a new definition for what is considered WOTUS. And that new test is relatively permanent waters that contribute to traditional navigable waters and wetlands that have a continuous surface connection to those features. So that's a significantly more narrow definition of WOTUS compared to what we've had previously when you think about isolated features like playa lakes, vernal pools, prairie potholes. Those are likely not subject to federal jurisdiction anymore. And neither are perennial feature, or I'm sorry, neither are ephemeral features that only carry water after a rain or snow event. So it definitely requires the Biden administration to take that rule that they finalized in March and take it back to the drawing board, because they're going to have to do a lot of work to make that definition comply with this Supreme Court decision.
I recall a conversation, I believe it was 6 months, maybe a year ago. You and I sat. Very similar situation. And I said, what about a decision from the Supreme Court where they write a rule? And I think your comment was that would be a great day if that ever happened. Great day, right?
Great day. Fantastic day. For, again, a couple reasons. I think that this panel of justices included two former clerks of Justice Kennedy. And that means a lot for a particular reason. Justice Kennedy, if you remember back in 2006 in the Rapanos case, he was the one in the 4-1-4 decision. And he authored the significant nexus test. So not only did you have a fractured opinion from the court, no clear majority, but then the controlling opinion was one that was so vague that we had an additional 13 years of litigation and rulemaking to even attempt figuring out how the significant nexus test worked. And as we saw, the court eventually just gave up on it, right, and went with something else. But I think that those two justices, Justices Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, learned that it's so important at the end of the day to have a clear majority in cases like this. And even though a Justice Kavanaugh may have wanted to do something on his own or kind of veer away from the three liberal justices or the majority of justices on the other side, he didn't. And he wrote the, I guess, concurring in the order, which is really kind of a dissent to the continuous service connection test. And in that opinion, he said, you know, I'm going to voice my concerns with this new test that the court is establishing, but I'm not proposing an alternative because I don't want there to be any confusion about what is the law of the land, what is the standard for EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers going forward.
So we have the Biden era law and you are rule, and you've talked about what's coming for that. What about producers who are kind of caught in the middle of that right now? In some states, they're not having to worry about that. Mm-hmm. But there are states where the Biden era rule is still in effect. Any suggestions? Where do those landowners go?
That rule is technically still on the books, right? But the test that really is the cornerstone of that test is legally invalid, right? It was ruled illegal. EPA and the Army Corps have both issued internal memos to staff basically saying to avoid using that test when going through the jurisdictional determination process. And we think, you know, a lot of landowners who have had to either push pause on projects or have had to go through the regulatory process on projects feel like you have a little more freedom now in kind of managing those features effectively. If you're building a dam over an ephemeral feature, over a dry wash or something like that, maybe talk to someone local, talk to your Soil and Water Board or someone from your State Department of Ag, but don't necessarily feel like you have to call EPA unless you get advised otherwise. But generally, I think, you know, landowners are going to notice a lot of additional flexibility going forward. One thing that I want to mention is that, you know, I think internally those agencies are talking about just kind of pausing all jurisdictional determinations until they get a new definition. But we believe that the Supreme Court did a really good job of outlining which features are in and which features are out. EPA and the Army Corps should be able to do their jobs right now with this new test. You know, that this does not put a halt on progress in the name of writing a rule. So we want EPA and Army Corps to be out there. We want them to be granting permits where necessary, going through those jurisdictional determinations, but doing it in light of the Sackett decision.
We have heard some comments and concerns, and I would say from those in the opposition of this, and then some just maybe repeated by those who don't know really what the decision means and what Waters of the U.S. really was all about. But I guess the question here is, and it's more of a statement, I guess, but I'm teeing it up for you. We're not talking about a green light to abuse the land. That makes no sense to anybody, does it?
Absolutely not. And I think that's a really good point. You know, farmers and ranchers, landowners generally, have a pretty selfish interest in making sure that they maintain a healthy water supply, right? Most ranchers not only care about water for the health of their cattle or, you know, whatever's grazing out there, but a lot of ranchers live on the property that they're ranching on. So it's the water for their family. It's the water that they're drinking when they go home to eat lunch in the middle of the day. These are also members of vibrant rural communities that rely on that water supply. So beyond just the regulatory nature of WOTUS, I think that, you know, each landowner feels a responsibility to take care of their water resource. And just because there's not a regulation, just because there's not a permitting requirement, doesn't equate directly to environmental damage or ecological damage. And I think that that's one of the biggest messages that we've tried to get across in having this conversation. The definition of WOTUS is a line drawing exercise, right? It's not saying which waters are protected and which waters aren't. It's saying which features are subject to federal jurisdiction and permitting requirements and which ones are left to states and counties and municipalities and landowners to take care of. All of that water is being taken care of. All of those features are being effectively managed. do you want EPA to do it, or do you want the state or the county to do it? That's the only question that WOTUS asks.
And it really steps us into the next topic, which is conservation, because it seems to go hand in hand. Producers really benefit from conservation efforts. There's a conservation title in the Farm Bill. What are you watching there?
Yeah, I think that's a great question and a great bridge, right? Because as we get a narrower definition of WOTUS, it's going to fall on landowners individually to implement activities, implement practices that effectively manage our water quality and our water resource. Grass waterways are an excellent example of something that a landowner might add on their landscape to manage nutrient runoff into those features that may eventually make it to a WOTUS, right? And that's something that you can receive cost share and technical assistance for through Farm Bill conservation programs. One of the biggest programs that I think our producers rely on is the EQIP program. It's one of a few working lands programs, but it's specifically targeted to livestock projects. So just a little history. When EPA determined that there was a need to create a CAFO Clean Water Act permit, they kind of promised livestock producers, it's like, look, there's going to be this regulation, there's going to be this permitting requirement, but the other half of the equation is that you're going to receive technical assistance and cost share funding from USDA through EQIP to assist in complying with these new regulatory requirements. And I think that took a lot of negotiation between livestock groups and individual producers and the government, but we got there. And so EQIP is really designed to help livestock producers implement those conservation practices, whether you're on a ranch or if you're in a feeding environment. And so it's extremely valuable to those livestock producers. And because of that, EQIP is designed with a 50% livestock carve-out, which means that at a minimum, 50% of all EQIP funding has to go to livestock-related practices. There is certainly the threat that we could lose that livestock carve-out. So I would ask your listeners, if you're really invested in the Farm Bill, and certainly if you use EQIP dollars for livestock practices, call your member of Congress and let them know that, and let them know how valuable those funds are and those resources are. Because we got a lot of conservation title funding in the Inflation Reduction Act last year, but none of that funding included a livestock carve-out. So we don't want that trend to continue into the 2023 Farm Bill.
So I guess the question really becomes, how do we do that? What's the best way to get that message to an elected official?
Yeah, call your member of Congress. But in addition to that, you know, I think, you know, NCBA works really hard in D.C. to convey that message. Joining NCBA is always an excellent way to support our effort here in D.C. And if you're not engaged with NCBA, be engaged with an association that is fighting for you in D.C., right? Because we work across the barnyard. We work with our other livestock groups. We work with our other ag groups that produce other agricultural commodities to make sure that the agricultural industry's voice is heard on Capitol Hill.
So good to see you. Enjoy the smile, because that's been a few years coming for Waters of the U.S., but I think you can keep smiling for a little longer.
Great to see you. Yeah, I'll enjoy it.
Mary Thomas Hart is Chief Counsel with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and joins us on today's Agribusiness Report.